Blog Talk Radio.
What is imperialism? What is metaphysical imperialism? What is a colonial administrator? Who qualifies and why? In addition to that, you'll hear special announcements that impact on the political struggle for freedom and our movement for justice and liberation. We will hopefully also have updates on our political prisoners who are at risk in our death camps. So without further ado, I would like to say good evening to our guests that I see are already with us. I see Dick, I see Larry, and I see Sister Neil. We want to say good evening, give you a shout out, and I want to pass the mic on this Tuesday evening, July 7th, to Brother Ralph Poynter.
Okay, thank you, Betty. Good evening, brothers and sisters. The overriding element in every situation or circumstance in a black life is racism. Birth, elementary school, housing, health, food, etc. Black lives have never mattered except during slavery and other circumstances where money is being made by our labors for others. The modern death penalty, 80%. And black, moved lynching indoors. The police as the army of occupation have taken lynching outside again. The lynch mob is the racist system, including the courts and the media. And because the lives of our heroes and sheroes who once protected us in our community do not matter to us, the people, our political prisoners are now dying in captivities. They are tortured and isolated. Only armed struggle can recreate our image in our own minds as well as the minds of. Wake up. Now is the time. And I'm going to add on to that. For those who have never heard of Frantz Fanon or have never read him, should take a moment and read Frantz Fanon. Now there is so much going on in today, and what we try to do is keep people appraised of what's going on and how it's going to affect them. And as I talk about people who claim to be political, and I'm one of them, and I say all of us who claim to be political, we can explain things to people which is extremely helpful. But if we can't tell you what's going to happen tomorrow, then we're kind of useless. We give you the basic tools, but without instructions as to what with them. And we have to prove faith. by the people who listen to us by being correct in our analysis. And you have to, you know, like, see everything because we are political people. I think what the, I believe it was Plato who said, you know, like, everything is political. And, well, and one of the things that
Aristotle,
we discussed way...
Aristotle.
Thank you so much. You see, we have a very intelligent but not so shy a panel. We will be... where we make a mistake. And I'm going to put myself on the limb to talk about one of the things I had said a long time ago, is the revolution that is taking place today is the information revolution. And we've often talked about Arundhati Roy and how one of the great things she says is, we be many, they be few. And to find out, who was it that said it a long, long time ago? And I have, Shelley had said it a long time ago. So what the difference in now and 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 50 years ago, 100 years ago, is information passes very quickly. And so we have all of this information. We're overwhelmed with information without understanding what it means. One of the things I'd like to add to tonight's program is Syriza in Greece. What does it mean? What does it mean when people say pigs in Europe? Portugal, Italy, Greece, and Spain, and all of these shorthand terms as to what's going to happen tomorrow. And I think we have to talk about what it means. And we have to prepare people for tomorrow by predicting it in the way that you understand who knows what political situations are all about and understands it are those who will tell us what's going to happen tomorrow. And if it really happens, then these are the people you must pay attention to. And those who say what's going to happen tomorrow and it doesn't happen, then these are the people you must ignore. So let's get on with the program. The anatomy of oppression. What is imperialism? What is metaphysical imperialism? What is a colonial administrator? And who qualifies and why? Now, all of these questions go back to the anatomy of oppression. And when I say the anatomy, the taking apart of how oppression happens. We know that one person taking from another person in any form is oppression. If somebody pulls a gun on you and takes your money, they are oppressing you. Now, the anatomy of that oppression is a gun, you're not wanting to be dead. What is the reason the person took the gun and put it on you? Did you get your money legally? Did you get it fairly? Under what circumstances? These are all things about the anatomy, you know, of anything. And so when we talk about the anatomy of oppression, what it means today, we must talk about imperialism. What does imperialism mean? It means robbery on a large scale by one government institution against another people. That's what imperialism is. That's what America is based on, an imperial power. Teddy Roosevelt sent the ships around the world painted white. It was his announcing to the world that we are here, we are powerful, we can get you anywhere, we can hurt you, and they never minded hurting people when they took things. They took their land, they called it euphemistically manifest destiny. You can always find a nice name for imperialism. You can always find a nice name for oppression. And many of us who have been educated or miseducated, who have spent a lot of time in school, have learned all of these statements, and when we believe them, manifest destiny, And when Teddy Roosevelt said, speak softly, carry a big stick, and it's an African proverb, and we of African ancestry says, hey, he's quoting our people. And I'm saying, well, let's be very careful about how he quotes our people and how he uses it. And we have to analyze everything. And so I had said, you know, this is what imperialism is. It's robbery on a grand scale and having an economy based on robbery at a grand scale. Now, how does it work? One of the things that my not-so-sainted father used to say to me, before you steal from someone or do anything to anyone, you first better make them like it. Because if they don't like it, they're going to take it back. Now, as a young guy, you know, like that sounded so outrageous to me. How are you going to make somebody like what you're taking from them? But I came up in an age where conversations with adults were one way. And your only answer was, yes, sir, or yes, ma'am. And then many years later, you were free to think about it. And now I think about that statement that so aggravated me inside. First, make them like it, because if they don't like it, they're going to take it back. And I apply that to today. And I see metaphysical imperialism. He didn't go to school. He just told me the truth that he had learned. And we who went to school didn't learn it. Metaphysical imperialism is when somebody has you believe something that benefits them, and in your mind, that supports imperialism. And we always think that the American exceptionalism, they didn't know what to do with their resources anyway. We brought them into a modern era. All of these things are total nonsense and lies. And when a lie becomes internalized by a people, and I'm talking about black people specifically, poor white people specifically, those who have not gotten anything out of this society, who yet believe in this society, we call that metaphysical imperialism. And Malcolm X said, you have been bamboozled. And so we don't like to hear that we've been bamboozled, but I think we can accept that we are the victims of metaphysical imperialism when we talk about the things that we believe that are not true that support imperialism. And the other issue we talked about, what is a colonial administrator and who qualifies and why? Well, this is what goes back to that metaphysical imperialism. A colonial administrator is somebody who works to support government's interpretation of things that helps them or enables them to steal from you and or steal from you or anyone else. And everybody who is involved in that is a colonial administrator, but was pointed out last week when we had the mini debate here that I had a debate with Lynn when I said, Brother Al Sharpton is a colonial administrator. And she says, well, no, he hasn't, you know, risen to that yet. And I says, well, he's a poverty pimp. And I remember saying that back in this in the early 60s. We were beaten in the 60s by poverty pimps. These are minor metaphysical or colonial administrators. Those who had us doing things or convinced the people that the government's interpretation of what was happening was correct. And today, I see him on major media, and I still say he's a poverty pimp that has been raised up by the government. He has been created by the government. He is one of the reasons why, when we had this struggle going in the 60s, we were about, and then the poverty pimps came in and stole the victory. They were the low-level people who were used by the political structure higher up. And in our case, it was the Democratic Party. And McGeorge Bundy, William Bundy, these names of imperialism.
Brooklyn Core, Ralph. They were there, too. Brooklyn Core. You
Brooklyn
know, Sonny
Core,
Carson and his gang.
Carson,
they would do whatever the Board of Education or the UFT paid them to do.
Exactly.
As we were fighting
and they,
the better schools.
Yes, and what happens is they have a role, and they stole the victory from us because we believed we were moving in a direction of self-empowerment. We were moving in direction of we are somebody. Nonsense, because as my mother taught me, and everybody didn't have a mother like my mother, who said, we all are what we do. These basic
they did what they thought was the smart thing. Let's never forget that these colonial administrators, these poverty pimps, whatever you want to call them, came in on the coattails of a legitimate movement, which is their usual method, and then they enriched themselves. And that includes people from the Ford Foundation. That includes people that you and I could name names right now. The people who came in.
Let me argue with you for a minute. When you say legitimate, that was not legitimate. Because everything we know, everything we've been through.
They come in on the heels of a legitimate struggle.
Oh, they came in on the heels of a legitimate struggle. Make that very clear.
And then they exploit that for their own ill-gotten gains by posing as somebody of the people.
Lynn is precisely correct. A good person stands up and says, this is unjust,
and
we must stop it.
I can't believe you're saying it, Dick.
And then somebody comes up and says, boy, I can make a buck on that if I pretend to be interested in that movement.
Yes, and we're giving Lynn and Dick a free space on that, because they were very much involved in this struggle. And I think that everything they say can be educational to those out there listening. They were there. They took the risk. They did the things that had to be done to confront these people. And we must understand that they use these poverty pimps to actually physically hurt people. And, you know, it's an interesting story, and I'm not going to get into the whole story, but we have to say this is a part of colonial
Can I give an example, Ralph?
Sure.
I mean, I could just take an example how I started out, and I decided that I had to do something for my community. My community was the Pratt Institute area. I went to school there. I was raising my family there. My children were going to PS20 in the neighborhood. And I said, well, morally speaking, I'm not doing anything. And I had to get out on the street. So I go and join the Pratt Area Community Council. They don't have an education committee. So I volunteer to be the single member of the education committee. And then I go ahead and I start getting the PA presidents in the Pratt area all involved and bring them to the Baptist church for meetings and everything else and educating them on what was going on around them. And those were great people. You remember their name, Margaret Stevens, Alberta Crawford, Barbara Hennessy, the whole bunch, right? And they were great people, and they bring this together. And then when we started to have successes, when we got incompetent principals dismissed, when we got the district superintendent thrown out and everything else, and we were making the news, now all of a sudden all the politicians, all the poverty pimps, as you call them, or colonial administrators, they want to have a piece of the pie. So they want to get in and ultimately take it over, and then it no longer is a movement. It's exactly what the man way up above has decided that he wants. Remember C. Douglas Dillon and the whole Kennedy crowd who used to come in? What was the war on poverty that they started? Lyndon Johnson started the war on poverty. We knew what that was. That wasn't warring on poverty. That was paying off people to be poverty pimps. paying off the pimps and the colonial administrators, making sure they got a buck from the federal government, a lot of bucks from the federal government, in order to stop us from advancing. And when I got the district superintendent, I say, I'm sorry, I don't mean I, our parents, the Parent Community Council of District 13, well, we got the damn district superintendent out, kicked out for incompetence. They came in. What did the Board of Education do? They appointed a black woman to be district superintendent. Now, what was she doing there? She wasn't going to help the school. She wasn't going to change a damn thing. But it delayed us. It interfered with what we were doing and everything else. And you remember the whole story. But I just want to say that this is the way it always works. Whatever your cause. I'm sorry, bro.
And now I'm going to cut into that. And so
please.
We have a Confederate flag flying, and we get involved in taking the flag down, all involved in the courageous, wonderful young woman who went up and took the flag down. We have the president singing the Amazing Grace. We get into the argument about whether people know what Amazing Grace is about, whether they understand that this was a worse slaver, and how could we be singing the song of the worst slaver. And then we have to get into as Dick Gregory was saying, people, he would rather hear nigger 50 times than have people sing, black people sing Amazing Grace. But then we get into the discussion of what religion is, what does it do, what is the Christian religion, and this whole. And I say the Christian religion is supposedly about forgiveness and redemption. Redemption. You say it again. It's about redemption. And the slave who wrote this Amazing Grace was the devil incarnate.
I thought we wanted to talk about this, Ralph.
I wasn't going to talk about it, but I got carried away. And so, understand, he was the devil incarnate, and we say that, well, even he can be redeemed. And this is where it comes from, but I don't want to be sidetracked on that. And so let us continue with the program. I think we've talked about it. We've talked about how the colonial administrators are there. They're there today. You changed.
By the way, Ed Bill Cosby and Kenneth Clark, the so-called experts on education, right?
Yes,
but Bill Cosby was right there in the mix of it, too.
Right in the mix. And so we have all of these people who are black, and they're saying, I'm black, so therefore I'm on your side, which is not true. And so, and so as long as we're into that, we're going to lose. We all are what we do. But we're going to have an update.
I'd like to, Ralph, if I may. I have a short piece, and this is on the positive side. This is about a woman, Juanita Young, who's been on the show a number of times, who lost her son when a New York City cop killed him. And when he took the witness stand in the trial of the damages, he didn't even bother to wear anything but a dirty T-shirt to court this guy. That's how much he disrespected the whole system. It wasn't his money. But anyway, Juanita Young picked herself up and became a leader in the Stolen Lives movement. That is the movement to keep tally of and to raise the issue of young people, of the parents who are left after a child is killed by the police. And this Saturday, they are having a large, an event, with what we call them, don't we? An event to celebrate the fact that we are out here still. We are never going to forget this. We do not forgive and forget. This is beyond the pale, and this is, as Ralph says, is a black person killed every other day, and many times it is a young black person. So Juanita has set up this get-together on Saturday at the Shabazz Center. That's at 165th and Broadway. It's starting at midnight, and it's when, in the old days in the 60s, when you had a party, you said midday till. So I'm going to say from noontime on, they will be at the Shabazz Ballroom, 165th and Broadway, and we will discuss and remember, and people will give testimony of what happened to them, how their child came to be killed, and what we can do about it now. I would urge everyone to go, this is a for real movement. This is something happening right now in our own communities and nationwide, I might say. So please come Saturday, 12 o'clock. I think you will find it is time well spent, and it will give you an uplift to see people who have come back from that worst of all things to lose a child. Margarita Rosario will be there. Juanita Young will be there. And I'm sure I'm terrible. I'm going to claim senior moment, but the other name escaped me. But there are a lot of folks that will be there to talk about their loss and how they've dealt with it and what they expect us to do. And, of course, I can't pass any moment without reminding people that when the Panthers, when the BLA was out there, there weren't this wholesale amount of every other day somebody getting killed. There was a force that countered that force, and that was an important thing, and these people are in jail, and they are waiting for us to liberate them. So let us always remember that. Thank you, Ralph.
Well, thank you for giving us the update. So I'm going to close out Colonial Administrator, and I'm going to make a lot of people angry, as I did 7 years ago, 6 years ago, when I said Obama was not our team. And, people were very upset about it. And I see him singing, that's to put us back to sleep again. And they do their job. This is a real Colonial Administrator. And I'm going to upset more people and say the church used to be a force of liberation. Now it is a force of counter-revolution because of metaphysical imperialism. That is to interpret religion differently for people of color than they do for non or people without color. And so let us move on to an update on our political prisoners, and one of the ones that I think that is most important for us to understand is the Reverend Pinckney, Edward Pinckney. And I'm going to ask Larry. Hello?
Oh, yes.
Hello, Larry.
Oh, Larry. Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me, brother?
Now I have an echo.
I don't know how. All right, Brother Rob, I'm assuming you can hear me.
Now we have the echo.
Tell him to
walk to a different spot, maybe.
Okay. Well, let me know. Let me know when you can hear me.
It's an echo. I'm getting an echo.
Perhaps it's some feedback. Somebody is. I don't know. It sounds like feedback.
Now we didn't start with an echo. It just came on. Okay. Go ahead, Larry. Now it's on. Now it's back again.
All right. All right. Thank you. I want to thank you. I want to thank Sister Lynn. I want to thank Sister Betty Davis. First of all, let me give the latest news. The latest news is that with respect to Reverend political prisoner Reverend Edward Pinckney in Michigan, his appeal bond, the brief, the legal brief was filed yesterday. That's July 6th, yesterday. It was filed and submitted. So we need to keep our eyes on what's going to happen in Michigan as to whether or not Reverend Pinckney, what he should be granted, and that is to be released from prison on appeal bond. Now, having said that, and that's the information I got today from Reverend Pinckney by way of Sister Dorothy Pinckney, his wife. Now, I want to be very blunt about something, Ralph, because you mentioned grief. You mentioned a number of things, and then people jumped in. Can you hear me, Ralph?
I can hear you, but the echo is still with us.
That's bizarre.
Okay, just continue.
Okay. So, you know, if people want to understand what is happening in Greece, they need to, first of all, understand what happened in Africa. All right? Now, I would urge everyone, if you really want to know what's going on in Greece, read the book entitled How Europe Underdeveloped Africa. I repeat, How Europe Underdeveloped Africa by Dr. Walter Rodney. All right? And you know, it is as the indigenous native people said, whether it was Chief Seattle, Chief Tecumseh, or Chief Crazy Horse, they all made the point that what we are doing, all right, to the rest of the world will come back on us tenfold. It will come back to haunt us. And that is precisely what is happening, all right? It will come home to roost, as Brother Malcolm said back in the early 60s. It will come home to roost. So you want to understand grief? Well, it's not just grief. Or, in fact, not even about just grief.
You want to speak, Larry?
What? Yes.
Maybe
Brother?
That's the echo.
Okay.
Would you
so, read Dr. Walter Rodney's book entitled How Europe Underdeveloped Africa. Because, see, it's coming on to roost for all of Europe. And Black America cannot, even though they love this grown man, hypocritical, lying, blood-sucking president of the U.S. Empire, Black people in America, Black Americans, cannot avoid the reality, because as Frantz Fanon said, people can have cognitive dissonance. I repeat, cognitive dissonance. But you know what? In my own words, reality, sooner or later, will kick them in their ass. All right? So let's be for real. Let's be about it. That's all I have to say. Thank you very, very much. Love to you, Brother Ralph. Love to you, Sister Lynn Stewart. And love to you, Sister Betty Davis.
Thank you, Larry. And one of the things I always say is I like to keep it simple. And one of the ways that I think you must understand what has happened in Greece is what hasn't been said. Greece is listening to the talking heads on television or on radio. It's the same struggle that is worldwide, that the rich are getting richer and the poor are getting poorer. And when you say banks, what were these loans all about? Not the money. And the prognosticators and talking heads on television or on radio seem to be telling us those lazy pensioners got money. I'm saying, wait a minute. It seems to me that abstention going for a long abstention, it should give you a living about. But I don't hear anything about loans, the subprime loans banks made, and the people have to pay them back. Like in America, they made subprime loans, and when they went bust, the American people paid it back. And the corporate heads are making $50 million. They're still up to their old tricks. But what has happened is the people, like Americans, who have had nobody, no political party to represent them, and I see the Democratic and Republican parties not represent people, leadership of the two-party system. They do not represent us, and there are very few people in those parties who dare to represent their constituency against the government. So, in Greece, people said, wait a minute, and they instantly created a party that's been trampled under in the solution of World War II in the communist Russia let Greece go to the west and took land that was contiguous to their own. It was the communists who fought the Nazis. They put a hurting on the Nazis. Over, they suppressed the communist movement, this righteous single coming back to the surface as the communist movement is basically a class struggle. Who gets money and who doesn't? And they said, we're not. The Greek government that they've had and not able to go after rich and those who have the money. So we're hoping this spread throughout Europe, and above all, we're hoping that the American people understand that they've taken our homes, our jobs, and our future, and we're still going through COVID. Hillary Clinton. I hear other people on there. Oh, you're there. Would you like to tell us a little bit on that? I'd like to talk about this evening. Hello?
Hello?
Joe, are you there?
Hello?
Yes, there, but there's a spot where we can hear you.
How's my echo? I want to thank everyone for having me invited to say something. I think that the that what we're a twin crisis going on. It's not just Greece. It's also Puerto Rico. It's the same problem that both of them, both countries, have had their sovereignty destroyed by having their currency controlled by outside forces, so that the monetary policy is made on the basis of robbing and raping and bankrupting these countries, both Greece in Europe and Puerto Rico in the Western Hemisphere. And both of them are have been robbed of their ability to control their own currency. The Puerto Rico uses the dollar and Greece uses the euro. And the euro is controlled by a combination of forces centered in Germany and the United States. And, of course, in Puerto Rico, it's the almighty dollar. And what they've done is they've ratcheted up financial imperialism to such a degree that they're emptying out the banks. And they're even openly talking in Greece about confiscating people's bank deposits to pay off the billionaires who claim that everybody else owes them. And it's actually the most absurd situation that's going on. And I think that people have to be that there's a new world order coming about that's swallowing up the ability of people to resist the gigantic global world scale bankers. And it's very important that people be able to in terms of the ability of certain nations not to be utterly crushed, to reclaim their sovereignty in terms of controlling a currency. And I think in the United States also, inside the imperialist countries, we've had the same kind of a process where more and more the currency is controlled not by by the government constitutionally, even by the capitalist government, but it's turned over to the credit mechanisms of the bankers who have actually taken over the country financially and destroyed any representational character or even the ability to pressure the government in terms of monetary policy. And I think this is something that has to really be focused upon, because there is today such an imbalance between the financial strength of the banks and even other forms of business. The large major banks have the control of everything. They've got us by the money, to paraphrase a sometimes vulgar expression. They've got us by the money. And when somebody's got you by the money, it's a big problem. A government that doesn't have the mechanism to control its own currency can't even be called a government. It has surrendered its sovereignty. And we've returned to a situation now where we have taxation and all kinds of other forms of monetary plunder without representation. We have no representation in terms of the monetary and financial policy. Most of it is done outside the government by private banks, and they are maneuvering through the example of Greece and so on. They're trying to centralize everything in the world under their control, and they're angry. They're angry that for example, they can't swallow up Russia, so they can't swallow up China completely. This is what they want to do, and of course, there's a great deal of resistance in the world that has stopped their plans short of fruition, but has still made people around the world suffer. And I think that we could draw some degree of optimism around the fact that the Greek people have stood up and they said no. They straightened out their middle fingers facing the imperialists, and they said, you know what, we're not going to crawl to your terms. We're at least going to make some show of defiance. And this is now being echoed, they admit, in countries like Italy and Spain and Ireland, who are also being swallowed up by the German centers higher up imperialists in Europe. And not to mention, of course, the United States from the outside, which is using the false collectivism of the European Union as a way of dominating and occupying Europe, reducing Europe itself to a colony and reducing itself to a colony of the banks.
Well, thank you so much for that analysis, Joe. And as I like to keep everything simple, as I've been saying for a long time, for 50 years, that do people, do you not understand that when this imperialist government cannot steal from the rest of the world, they're going to steal for us? Foreclosures, we lost jobs, our education is gone. And so when we were starting way back a long time ago telling people this was going to happen, well, it's happening now. Do you understand it now? They're stealing from us. But we have to say that the Greek people have stood up and formed the government and have said no more. And we're hoping that people around the world under this capitalist imperative start saying no, and we try to say it no right here. And the issue in Greece becomes complicated because the elephant in the room that's not to be recognized is the class difference. Those who have money, bankers and their allies, have the money, and the rest of the people do not. And the system works to keep it that way. And so I'm going to go on and see if Mary Neal would like to say something, or Hoggener, who would like to say something on this issue.
Well, thank you, Ralph Hunter. Thank you very much.
I'm here.
Listen, they have taken advantage of the fact that you have all the phone lines open, and they inflict static over the voices that they want to. And so, unfortunately, all lines open at once does not work. I want to say that you mentioned Christianity, and I want to say that they have lied to Christians for years. The Bible does not teach people to forgive, okay? In fact, the Bible says, so watch yourselves. If your brother or sister sins against you, rebuke them. And if they repent, forgive them. That's Luke chapter 17, verse 3. Don't forgive people while you're supposed to be at the rebuking stage. To forgive people without repentance is foolish, cowardly, and disobedient to God. So I just want to let all the Christians know that you are being disobedient to God when you forgive people without repentance, because that is only being cowardly. You have not really forgiven them without repentance. You're just lying. And God does not even expect you to do something like that. True repentance requires someone to turn around from their evil ways. It requires them to pay restitution for what they've done wrong. And it requires them to sincerely ask or forgiveness. These empty-handed apologies are unacceptable to God, and they're unacceptable to man. So no Christian is expected, according to the real Bible, to forgive people who never repented. That's Luke chapter 17, verse 3. Thank you, please, Ralph.
Well, thank you, Mary Neal, and I've never been a theist, although I was forced into the Christian religion by my mother, and she always said that in my house, Christianity is the only religion, and you had to be a Christian in her house, but it certainly puts a light on reparations. That we cannot go around forgiving people who apologize and then do nothing about it. And not only do they do nothing about the past, they continue to steal from us in the present day. And one of the things that we're, the group that we met, the group that is talking now, some of the members, Betty Davis, Lynn Stewart, Dick Winterly, myself, we met around the issue of control, community control of the education system, which meant control of the budget as well as what was being taught. And the other day I looked at the largest budget, education budget in the world, New York City education budget procurement is $6 billion. And it is 60 to 70% black and Latino. But we don't have the jobs or the money. This was why that was important. And so for 50 years, we've been trying to teach people the importance of the control of education for the jobs. And we had the poverty pimps and colonial administrators were telling people it was someplace else, and demonstration district and some other thing that had nothing to do with the power of the dollar to hire, the power of the dollar to educate. And of course, those were those outside forces, the imperialist forces, and it was the United Federation of Teachers, the management of the New York City Board of Education. These were the imperialist forces imposing their will on the rest of us at the cost of our youth. We've lost two generations since then, from the plantations to the projects to the prisons, and we tried to interdict that at the education system, and we were not able to do so, and we have paid a heavy price. And every time I see go past the shelf, all of the young men on the street with no skills and no education, I lament the fact that we missed them. And we still have these poverty pimps out there, these colonial administrators, singing songs, forgiving people, as Mary Neal said, without any show of goodwill. And one of the things that we ask every week, no, we demand every week, the first show of goodwill by this corrupt government must be, our first demand must be to free the people from these death camps, those people who fought to protect us many years ago when the youth as a group, and I'm saying it was the gentlemen who carried weapons. You cannot convince somebody with words who wants to kill you. And if anybody, the lesson needs to be taught, it was when this young man walked in and said what he was going to do, and people tried to talk him out of that. Well, it doesn't work that way. You don't talk anybody out of anything unless they feel that the same thing could happen to them. And I forget how many guns that are in Texas today. There's a number that just is getting right past me, and it's a big number. The number, 51 million firearms in Texas. Can you imagine? And I think it goes back, one of the things we used to talk about in our meetings, that when Colt said, well, the Declaration of Independence said the words, we gave you freedom. And the freedom he gave people was as far as that Colt rifle could shoot. They had freedom, and because they were willing to use it for what they considered as their freedom, and their freedom was the right to keep slaves. And there's so much that we have to, make people understand. But these conversations, to those who would listen, are very important. I'm going to back off for a few minutes and see if anybody else would like to make a comment on what we have spoken on so far this evening. Is the mic open? Okay. I see we have done a pretty decent job of making people understand. Hello?
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 Okay, that's just me. And so we have had a nice hour, and I was... Hello?
Hello? I hear you.
We've had a nice hour, and as I've said, we don't want to go beyond an hour because so much has happened this evening. We have so many people who are at meetings. The million-person march over in New Jersey is being planned this evening by Larry Ham, and many of our people are up at that meeting because it's important. Go to those meetings and organized to make people understand. But understand that if you don't go to the root cause, talking about jobs, we don't have jobs, we don't have the ability to educate our children, we're whistling dickens. If we don't have the will to defend ourselves, it is not even worth whistling dickens. So we must, you know, like, understand that, you know, I think I read the number a minute ago, so phenomenal. People in Texas have guns. It's not people who need them. It's the people who have been oppressing us for a long time. They have no problems in guns. We have our colonial administrators, and I say, indigenous people, which is breaking down, 51 million firearms are in, you know, like, in the hands of people in Texas, and not many of those people are black or Mexican. Now, it's New York City outreach meeting for July 25th. A million people's march against police brutality, racial justice, economic equality. This is economic inequality. I guess one way or the other. Otherwise, somebody and we're the ones who have been for a long time, and we have to understand that and say it simply and say it clear. And we have Larry Ham, Pam Africa, representatives of Black Lives Matter, Charles Barron, mothers whose sons have been killed by police, Marilyn Zuniga, who was fired by the Fraternal Order of Police. Can you imagine that? He was fired by a police organization, like the way she was teaching, although everyone who had anything to do with teaching said she was great for our children, all children. And so when we don't control that, when we don't control the jobs, and we don't understand that we must control that and control the jobs, if we don't understand that we must protect those who protected us, and you see, I get carried away with that because I remember on many a program that I spoke, when it gets personal and up close, Lynn Stewart was in jail, in a death camp, 18 months after she was supposed to get an operation before she got it. Cancer came back 4 months before they took a second look at it. These, my friends, are death camps. And our brothers and sisters are there in the death camps. And we must care of them. We must fight for control of our communities, and that includes the police, the education, and the police. And I forget, the great economist made a statement about what things are like. I'm trying to, my memory is shorter and shorter. But anyway, he said the solution to the solution for inequality in democracy or in capitalism is that the democracy in the workplace is a cure for capitalism. This is the economist Richard Wolff. Democracy in the workplace is a cure for capitalism. And I say community control is a cure for lack of democracy in the workplace. Therefore, community control is a cure for capitalism. We have just about run out of time, and let us remember that, what Wolff had said, and thanks all of the guests who came in and gave us the benefit of their wisdom this evening. And we look forward to hearing from you next week to give us the benefit of more of your wisdom. And we've gotten into great detail about what's happening. As I say, we must understand it's going to get worse before it gets better, because we're just beginning. You know, John Paul Jones was it said, we have not yet begun to fight. We have not yet begun to fight. My brothers and sisters,
I wish I could break all the chains holding me. I wish I could say all the things that I should say. Say them loud, say them clear, for the whole world to hear. I wish I could share.